I joined Canopy because I like to make jokes on Twitter, and the folks at Tweed wanted me to be a part of some elaborate April Fool's prank they wanted to play on
They like
Twitter.
to jokes.
Yeah, so I agreed to like be a part of a prank, and then they pulled the plug. They didn't want to do the joke anymore. So I played my own prank and I tweeted that I'd been hired as their VP of dispensary relations. And people bought it. Like Mike Hager from the Globe and Mail reached out to me for an interview over it. That guy Damien from Vice, like he didn't even call me, and he like wrote about it in his blog. It was a wicked success. I've still never I'll, I don't think I'll ever make an April Fool's joke as good.
Hey, what's good, everybody? And thank you for tuning in to episode 87 of Highly Invested, where we invest in ourselves, talk about personal growth, and we ask entrepreneurs and content creators about the best investments they've made in themselves that help get them to where they are today. Today on the show, we've got Adam Greenblatt, also known as Weed Pro on TikTok. Adam has been a cannabis activist for 15 years, starting his career in Quebec, founding one of the original compassionate care clinics in all of Canada. Soon after, his curiosity, clever tactics, and knowledge of the plant got him a consulting role with one of Canada's largest licensed producers, Canopy Growth, back in 2015. He helped expand Canopy's footprint through Canada's official legalization and continues to consult in the industry today. So I wanted to learn what drew him to cannabis, how he had so much conviction, and how chasing your dreams is the best way to make them happen. And we are live with Adam Greenblatt, the Weed Pro. How are you doing today, Adam? Thanks for joining.
Great. Thanks for having me. It's just Weed Pro, by the way. I don't claim any of the.
Nah. Yeah, that's okay. But you're still the only Weed Pro, I think, on TikTok. I don't think you're on Instagram or any of the other platforms.
I am on Instagram and I'm on Twitter. I'm just not on there with the Weed Pro handle. Like when I signed up for TikTok, it was like pick a username and I was like Weed Pro. I was just trying like to weed anything.
Yeah.
And no one had picked Weed Pro. So I picked it. And here we are.
Must have felt like a steal at the time. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, internet real estate. I mean, that's the new domain stuff, right? Internet real estate, parking, social media handles. It's like buying .coms 10 years ago, right?
Yeah.
So if you have a good idea, you can't just lock down a website domain. You got to lock down all the social handles across how many apps, you know, Snapchat, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, etc. So
yeah, smart play.
Lucked out with Weed.
Yeah, well, Weed Pro works. Happy 420, by the way. Was it like any other Tuesday for you?
Yeah, thanks. Happy 420 to you as well. It was like any other. I mean, I guess it was even less eventful for me this year. Last year, I popped into a bunch of like digital 420s and stuff like that, but it's in the middle of the week and it's a day like any other. I mean, every day to me is a great day to celebrate freedom and justice, the end of cannabis prohibition, celebrating this awesome plant. You know, cannabis is a super fascinating, super useful plant. You know, why limit that to just 420?
That's a great point, especially if you can see that every single day, just the fact that, yeah, you know, I can enjoy this to finish my
actually work. And actually just to build on it, like in Canada, 420 is like not the only day in Canada. Like it's 420 is like the beginning of like stoner summer. The first week of May, there's always a protest called the Million Marijuana March. I think it's died down since we legalized it, but it's a thing elsewhere. Yeah. And then July 1st, it's our July 4th for the American viewers, but it's like, it's our Independence Day.
Yeah.
It's Canada Day. Activists have long called July 1st Cannabis Day. And then suddenly 7/10 became a thing, so you know, July 10th, 9 days later, is another one. So really a lot of weed all summer, all the time.
Every time. Yeah, that's so true. I mean, whenever the weather's nice enough to be outside and enjoy it, then you're gonna do that and you're gonna carry it all the way through. This new 7/10, yeah. What is that about? Because I haven't heard that.
Oh, 7/10 is just like it's just like a build on the stoner numerology. So 420 is like the number for weed or whatever, but 7/10, when you flip it around, says oil. So 7/10 is like the four, it's the numerology for dabbers.
For dabbers, oh, right.
7/10 is like, yeah, if it's, yeah. I made a joke about it.
People are getting creative. I saw that. I did. I saw that.
It did good numbers.
Well, TikTok, has it surprised you since you've got on there? Did you expect to build up a bit of a community on there?
I spent a few months just sort of like scrolling and learning the language of the medium and like understanding the memes and how to sort of put them together.
Smart.
I've been a spokesperson in like my other life. Like I'm used to being on television and radio and like media talking about cannabis. So TikTok is nothing really new for me. Like the format is a bit new and takes some learning, but like talking about weed in front of a camera is what I've been doing for 15 years. So it wasn't unexpected to build a following, but the way that you build a following on TikTok is interesting, you know?
Yeah. I think you've learned with hashtags that those play a big role over time too, but just, you know, putting yourself out there onto any app into the ether sort of, and seeing what comes back. Clearly you've done well.
Thanks. It's what I do well on that has fascinated me and kind of piqued my curiosity, because like I did not realize how many people are trying to quit smoking pot. Like I didn't realize how many people are out there. Like the tea break trend on TikTok is fascinating, right? Like it's a real thing. So like I figured that I would have some success on TikTok talking about cannabis because I've had success. I just didn't realize that like what I would become sort of famous for on TikTok was like talking about the components inside of cannabis smoke, or like warning people that like cannabis isn't just like this wonderful, miraculous, beneficial substance, that there are risks and harms associated with it. Like, fuck, I didn't realize people were so ignorant about blunt wraps. Like one of my like really successful videos was just like, I replied to a question being like, no, there's tobacco in blunt wraps, you know?
Underratedly.
Like, the comments blew up. People were like, no way. Like the kids are being lied to about smoke. The kids are being lied to about weed smoke. And like the TikTok comments are just proof of that for me. So so it's been interesting. It's been a learning experience. I'm enjoying it.
The harm reduction tips are so important, right? Because I think even when TikTok started a few months back, it feels like everyone was, oh, cannabis is this great thing. Why haven't we started using it all the time before? And then it gets to the period where like, okay, we can't use it all the time because like any other substance, you need moderation, right?
Totally. Totally.
Yeah.
Like just talking, it's shocking like how sort of ignorant some people are to like the actual risks. Like people think that weed smoke is just harmless, that it's like
still smoke. Like
I said something like, you know, there's tar in weed smoke, you know that, right? And people are like, there's no tar, that's impossible. Like, it's terrifying sometimes. Yeah. But I mean, I'm happy about it, growing the following. I mean, there's controversy today. I've ruffled some feathers because I questioned these terpene shots. I questioned this company that sells these really expensive terpene shots that they claim like boosts your high. Like,
but like with someone with your background, it's you have the right to do that because you just understand exactly what they're doing, seeing right through it.
I guess I have the right to do it. I mean, it's TikTok. It's a platform where people talk about stuff. But like the level of gimmickry and like myths that make their way around TikTok is quite shocking. Like the mangoes, the vitamin C stuff, other things.
Well, just for context, because you had like an example, let's say 12 little shots, and you're paying $40 for these 12 little shots, but the ingredient inside of each costs pennies. So like people don't know that. And
yeah, it's a bit deceiving. I mean, like, buyer beware, you know, consenting adults can buy whatever they want. I don't care. But yeah. Like, if you're not doing the math on like what is actually there, well, it's your money.
But yeah. Yeah. Well, the more I like to say, the more you know, right? But
yeah. Now you know, and knowing is half the battle. So like there's a lot of misinformation out there, that's for sure. But like those terpene shots, for example, like there's more limonene in a glass of lemonade than in their whole 12 pack of shots, right? It's what I'll give them is that like the amount of terpene that is in each of those shots is about equal to like the amount of terpenes that you'll find in about 1 gram of wheat. So
interesting. Okay.
There's something there. There's definitely more terpenes in those shots than you'll find in a mango, but that's not evidence.
Yeah. And also not the point of like, just like, what's the substance for now? Like, why are you trying so hard to find the certain sort of, I do love the education aspect of TikTok. That's great. And I find it's good that people are asking questions, because the questions I find are so far-fetched. Even myself, like 10 years ago, I just realized I like joints. So all I'm ever going to need is flour and rolling papers. Like, don't need to ask for anything else.
Yeah.
I'm a happy camper, but a lot of questions at a left and right field.
Yeah. Everyone's curious to know about vaping. People are worried about the effects of smoking. So many questions. There's so much curiosity out there. It's great. And like, TikTok's fun. Like, what I love TikTok. I use TikTok mostly to learn and to laugh, you know?
Yeah.
I follow comedy stuff. Sorry for the sirens.
It's okay. We get those here too.
I go on TikTok to learn and to laugh for the most part.
That's a great use for it.
Yeah, and like, there are some fantastic comedians on TikTok. I like TikTok is such a talent show for just like, I found some hilarious accounts, just like the voiceovers, the impressions, I love it. I mean, I have to take a TikTok tea break sometimes. It can become so compulsive.
That's smart. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like, I don't know if you can see, but just
probably the most addicting social media app I've ever used. And I've been on Twitter and stuff for like 10 years, but.
Right. Well, you say that, and I've just kind of had like flashes of different scenes of videos in my head that have just, I'm trying to hold in the laughter, but, and on this note, well, you do comedy on your page. So are you looking to branch out and to maybe do a bit more of that? And you get these videos for inspiration.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that actually. I'm interested in getting and pursuing comedy personally. Like, I'm trying to like develop my comedy, and I'm writing some stand-up bits. Like, I would like to try my hand at stand-up comedy one day.
Nice. Your favorite comedian?
I wasn't expecting that one. Who's my
favorite? That's a tough one, but you can't.
Dave Chappelle comes to mind. I love Dave Chappelle's style. I love all of his stoner humor too.
Has anyone ever told you look like a young George Carlin? Well, you could pass that off.
That's very flattering. That's extremely flattering. No, I've never gotten George Carlin. I get other doppelganger comments sometimes, but never George Carlin. That's flattering. He's a legend.
He is. Yeah. I'm glad I asked.
Yeah, I mean, Bill Hicks. I grew up on like Kids in the Hall and Saturday Night Live and all of the CBC comedy, right? Like, Canada is such a fountain of hilarious people, right? Like, our comedy industry is like, you know, is one of the best in the world. We're hilarious.
A lot of exports.
Yeah, and I grew up with all of that. Like, I grew up on the Comedy Channel, right? I grew up watching it was Channel 44 for me in the Greater Toronto area. But like, I watched that channel all the time. Every hour, didn't matter the show.
That's great. Yeah, I think we were 46 Comedy Network, but I'm glad I asked, because that's definitely something, even in my, like, by the end of my lifetime, yeah, I'd like to do comedy at some point, because who doesn't like to make people laugh? It's like, if you can.
And it's a great platform to test out your jokes. The like that AB format it's really, I mean, it's funny. People enjoy watching it, but like, it's, if you're developing your comedy and your style and your delivery, like, it's a great platform.
Yeah,
great way to do it.
It is good. Well, I'm glad you're taking advantage of that. Now let's jump into how did you end up meeting cannabis, sir? When was your first interaction with it?
My first interaction with it? Yeah. First time I ever interacted with it was the first time I ever smelled it. I was at, you know, Mount St. Louis, you know, it's a ski hill near Barrie, Ontario. It's where I learned to ski as a kid. I first smelled weed in line for the chairlift at Mount St. Louis. And I was with my mom, and she asked me if I knew what that smell was. And I had no idea, but it's such a remarkable odor,
yeah,
right? And aroma is such a powerful part of our cognition and our memory and all that stuff. So that was, to answer your question, that was my first interaction with it.
Cool.
Yeah. I started smoking weed when I was a teenager, like many other people do. I started using it as a coping mechanism to help with, like, you know, the trauma of being a teenager and, like, sort of the trauma that I was dealing with in my home life. Yeah. You know, I was, like, self-medicating with it, like many other people do. And in high school, I kind of just, I got arrested in high school actually for smoking weed. And that's actually, and that actually kind of set me onto this path of becoming a weed pro, because one of the conditions of my, like, reduced sentence was that I had to do a project about drugs you find at school for my school. And that led me to discover the website Arrowhead, which is, like, you've seen it. It's like the drug encyclopedia. It's like the preeminent harm reduction drug encyclopedia. I happened upon that when I was 15, 16 in high school. And that website turned into my, like, project about drugs for school that kept me from getting a criminal record. And from that point on, I was very fascinated by cannabis. You know, the other side of it is that my dad has suffered from multiple sclerosis since I was born. He continues to be alive and to live with MS, but
man,
he was not getting relief from the medications that he was using. So 2 years after I had been arrested at high school for smoking weed, for self-medicating with weed, yeah, I was back at my high school basically filling my dad's weed prescription. And that really made me angry. And it turned me into a weed activist.
That's amazing, though, like, the personal story. Thanks for sharing that. And I just got to say, your ability to articulate, and, like, because I guess a lot of how you view it is not how I used to view it. And where I actually, as a teenager, were into university as well, especially after a breakup, my first, like, big breakup, and then going to university, but living at home with my parents and being very restricted, like, consuming cannabis helped me get through that. And, you know, to the untrained person, they'd say, oh, you're a stoner or whatnot, which is like, no, you know what, actually, like, it helped along the way. And it's just, it's nice to hear you view it in that light, because that's another very true way to put it, right?
Well, it's taken a while. I mean, like, I'm only as articulate as I am now because I've made a bunch of goofs along the way.
Right. You know? Yeah.
It takes practice, and you got to put yourself out there, and it takes years to develop a thick enough skin to, like, even just, like, share what I share with the world. Especially as my comments are currently just filling up with people who are very upset with my challenging their beliefs about a gimmick.
And because you're so good at it, that's probably what's making them the most angry. You just say it well. So, but no, it also comes with putting yourself out there and getting on screen, like you said, and stuff. So that's, it all helps. Can you share a little bit how you got started in the industry in Canada then, pre-legalization?
Sure. So after high school, I moved to Montreal from Ontario, and I became involved with the Marijuana Party of Canada, which was a political party that was formed entirely for the purpose of advocating for the end of cannabis prohibition. And I ran in the 2004 federal election for office for the Marijuana Party. And obviously with no, you know, hope of ever winning, I ran against the former Justice Minister Erwin Kotler, as a matter of fact. And then I got a job a year and a half or 2 years later as the working in the Montreal Compassion Center. And compassion clubs at the time, there were only a dozen or so formal organizations that were engaging in civil disobedience to supply people with a medical need with cannabis. And working in the Compassion Club was, like, my first real opportunity to apply all of the theory that I'd been teaching myself over the years, right? Like, I absorbed every book about cannabis. I just, again, it was all I would read about. I followed it religiously. And so getting that job in the Compassion Club was a way to not only just, like, engaging in civil disobedience on a daily basis, because you know, as an expression of my conviction for this cause, it was also a great way to apply theory that I had learned and to, like, interact with people using cannabis as a medicine for, like, things that, like, for other things. Like, I learned about it through my dad's MS and how beneficial it can be for multiple sclerosis. But I just came to learn about so many other reasons people were using it. I was at the Compassion Club for 4 years, and then my former partner Aaron Prosk and I formed our own dispensary called the Cannabis Access Society. And originally we were just using that to produce cannabis edibles for the medical market then. And then in 2010, the police raided all of the compassion centers, except we were not arrested because we were low key. And so we just started supplying cannabis direct to patients within days of the police raids.
When was medical cannabis legalized in Canada? Wasn't that 2001?
Yeah, like 2000, 2001. The first compassion clubs opened in 1996, 1997. Late 90s are when the compassion clubs opened.
Okay.
Then early 2000s, it was for the first medical marijuana program was put in place.
Did you still have to go through the government in order to sell directly like your edibles to patients or?
No, it was illegal.
It was illegal.
We were outside of the regulatory system. And like what you have to understand is like, even though there was a medical marijuana program at the time, it was not a constitutionally viable program. The Health Canada was forced into legalizing medical marijuana because a man named Terry Parker.
I've read his story.
And a few other people. There were some other early cannabis activists that back then who were just getting fucked around with by the cops.
Right.
Well, they took it to court and they won. So the court said, listen, Health Canada, listen, Government of Canada, like if you want to keep banning cannabis for everyone, you need to carve out a protection for people who use it as a medicine. So that's how the cannabis program was born. And then like between the inception of that program in the early 2000s, all the way up to legalization in 2018, that program just kept getting court challenges and just kept getting whittled away because it was too restrictive. It was like, it was too much based in the prohibition paradigm of like, this is about keeping it away from all the other people. It wasn't really about helping sick people get it. It was about maintaining the overall prohibition.
And so it was not a good program, essentially.
No. And so that actually created the social license for us to operate. Like if the government had like a working cannabis program at the time, like no one would have had to have broken the laws to provide that reasonable access.
Mm-hmm.
So Aaron, my former partner Aaron and I started our own dispensary called the Cannabis Access Society. We were wholesaling edibles. We were supplying patients directly, also through the mail and across Canada. And that was, from there, we were the first medical cannabis providers to attend the Family Medicine Forum, which is like the trade show for family doctors in Canada. If you're a family doctor, you go to this thing every single year, you get course credits, you learn about all kinds of stuff. Somehow I managed to get us a booth there and we were a hit and I met all kinds of physicians and it really was a big turning point in my career in the cannabis movement generally, especially in Quebec. Fast forward years later, I met Dr. Michael Dworkind at this Family Medicine Forum. He's just a renowned physician, great guy from Montreal. He he co-founded the palliative care wing of the Jewish General Hospital in Montreal.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, really just a man of incredible accomplishment and
good character.
And like he works in palliative care. He's a palliative care, guru. And there is no more obvious application for cannabis than at the end of life.
Yeah. Good point.
So yeah, I mean, I'm getting lost here, but
yeah, no, that's okay. I'll try to course correct you. No, that's really cool though. Just that you did it based on your own conviction and as opposed to, not waiting for the laws.
Yeah.
Like true activism right there, man. And like, just to think, by the end of the decade, you had no idea whether change would have come and whether Canada would have actually legalized. And then,
well,
maybe you didn't.
Let me finish. I'll finish the story, actually. So,
okay, cool. Yeah.
We meet a bunch of physicians at this trade show. A couple of years go by. We start, and then Health Canada invites us to start consulting to consult with them as a stakeholder on the future medical marijuana program that they're trying to put into place.
Ah, okay.
The medical marijuana program that gave birth to all the companies you're invested in, right? Like not the MSOs, but like—
No, the LPs, Aphria and—
Yeah, like yeah. That medical marijuana program birthed Aphria, Tilray, you know, Canopy, all the big ones, all the weed companies that exist now. So we were a part of that really important transition process. And when we saw the first draft of those regulations, I knew that was legalization. As soon as Health Canada said, we're going to create a commercial framework and we're going to let as many companies as they want, we're going to license as many companies as apply to grow medical cannabis, I knew legalization was in the bag. There was no going back from creating a system, from creating a free market system for medical cannabis distribution. So
yeah.
To me, it was pretty inevitable. I remember my former colleague, Rade Kovacevich, who is, he's currently president of Canopy Growth. He's the chief product officer, actually. He was running a dispensary in Guelph at the time. We were pals. I remember calling him. He was the first person I called on the first draft of those regulations. And I said, dude, this is legalization. It is happening.
Sure it's enough. So exciting. Just because I'm 28, but I took a break from cannabis a while back and went to travel. And obviously, so for that period of time, it just wasn't in my thought process or anything. But what I think is funny and just naive of me is before going over to teach English overseas, at no point did I think cannabis legalization would come anytime soon.
Yeah.
And then to my surprise, just kind of coming home and like, what? This is going to happen? It kind of just like, oh, snapped me right back into my roots in a way.
Yeah, yeah. It was a big aha moment for a lot of people.
Yeah, well, how people have power, right? Individuals can make change as well as if they educate themselves and they know enough to obviously yeah. argue their case.
Yeah. So I, after the... When those regulations came into effect and the MMPR was put into place, we were one of the first groups to close down anything illicit that we were doing. Like any gray market medical marijuana supply that we were doing just was over on April 1st of 2014. So we turned our dispensary into the first medical clinic with a focus on cannabis in the province of Quebec. And we really pioneered, we were pioneers in the model that continues to exist, where clinics are the sort of the channel point to the medical marijuana supply system. We called it Santé Cannabis, which was a sort of a poke at Health Canada because they're Santé Canada in French.
And, okay.
I mean, we started out with five physicians prescribing cannabis. Aaron owns and operates Santé Cannabis now, and she's got more than a dozen physicians working for her. And she's actually turned the clinic into a clinical research organization. So she's actually running clinical trials for companies who are trying to bring cannabis products to market in the more traditional way. So I'm really proud of that. And then I a couple of years after Santé Cannabis, I joined Canopy, and that's a whole other story.
Yeah, cool. Then so can you tell us, share the ride through the process of growing that company, which for a long time was the biggest cannabis company in Canada, still is in Canada technically, but yeah, going into the legalization process, how were you involved?
And I still think they're of all the big companies that I have the most hope for them, to be honest, just based on their fundamentals. But I ended up working at Canopy because, again, like some of my friend Rade and his gang, actually, like Bruce Linton bought his company and that's how he came into the company. I joined Canopy because I like to make jokes on Twitter, and the folks at Tweed wanted me to be a part of some elaborate April Fool's prank they wanted to play on Twitter.
They like to jokes.
Yeah. So I agreed to like be a part of a prank, and then they pulled the plug. They didn't want to do the joke anymore. So I played my own prank and I tweeted that I'd been hired as their VP of dispensary relations. And people bought it. Like Mike Hager from the Globe and Mail reached out to me for an interview over it. Like that guy, Damien from Vice, like he didn't even call me and he like wrote about it in his blog. It was a wicked success. I don't think I'll ever make an April Fool's joke as good.
That's amazing, man, to land you that job, like at the pinnacle moment.
Yeah. And a few days later, I was negotiating with Bruce and Mark and Rade. I was in the company. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's really cool.
I came on to run their Quebec strategy. I was the French language spokesperson for all the years that I was there. Helped them develop the brand that they now have on the Quebec market called Vert, among others. I also helped them bring 28 grand bags to market when I was working in the business development side of things. So a lot of successes at Canopy. I wish I'd had more, to be honest, you know, but I'm very proud of what we accomplished. And it was like, I mean, it was just a wild, crazy time to be in weed at all, let alone a Canopy where like the craziest stuff was happening, right? Like by the time I was working at Canopy, I had hit most of my bucket list stuff. You know, I was like, weed is on its way to being legal. Right. I started this, you know, my partner and I started this clinic. You know, I've accomplished a great deal in cannabis. I'm satisfied. And then like, man, the stuff at Canopy was just wild. Like meeting Snoop, doing deals, like working for a company that's like making gummies for Martha Stewart and like working with Seth Rogen and stuff. Like it was wild. And for me, working at Canopy was like an extension. It was a continuation of my firsts in the industry. Like we did the first medical cannabis clinic, the first medical trade show as a cannabis supplier. I'd intervened in the RV Smith case. There was a court case that legalized cannabis oils for medical purposes very, very late, like in 2015. I was an intervener in that. So I had accomplished quite a lot by the time I got to Canopy, and then it all just got taken to the next level, right?
I imagine those early years, like 2015, 2016, 2017, when shares listed or IPO'd for like $1 or $2, I just imagine like the amount of money they're able to raise and the partnerships that they're, you know, big plans, big visions, and then obviously things happen over time. But like, yeah, it's very cool to... Electric, I imagine it was.
It was a wild time to be involved. I didn't know anything about the stock market. Like I didn't know what an IPO even was until a weed company did it. Until there was like, you know, and Canopy was the first cannabis company on a stock market. Like
that's
that was
the only reason I'm interested in like the market, you know what I mean? Because the cannabis companies.
I mean, like people came out of the woodwork to ask me for investment advice. Like a lot of old buddies from summer camp that I hadn't heard from in years were like, what's the deal with Tweed? Like, should I invest in the cannabis sector? You know, I'm like, great to hear from you. Like, yeah, of course you should. Like, but that was such a seismic shift for the whole cannabis movement.
Yeah.
You know, when your grandma, when your anti-drug grandma is buying a share in Weed, like we won. No, there's no more definitive victory than that, I think.
No, the fight's still going on, and in the US is just going to be like 3.0.
Yeah.
It's going to take it to the next level if that's possible.
I should add that, like, you know, it would be nice if they'd let everyone out of jail and like if they'd done the record expiry stuff a little bit better, but like it's being worked out. It wasn't perfect, but in terms of just social acceptance, money talks.
It's there. Yeah, exactly. But no, like, I mean, that the whole equity thing, like expunging records, it's such a no-brainer. If any politician wants to get voted in again, like the amount of families that can reconnect because of that, the amount of communities that can come back together and try to rebuild, at least try, because it's just but that's what sucks, that I've learned as an investor, is like as much as I want reform for humanity's sake, investors are going to get paid first. But at least I feel good about being invested in something that's changing the status quo for the better over time.
So
what would you give, based on 2 years of legalization or going on the third year, how would you rate Canada's performance, and just how do you see it going forward? Like obviously you have don't have much to compare it to, but
There's plenty to compare it to. I mean, like you could compare it to the States. I mean, the majority of American states have some kind of legal weed. It's been decriminalized in Holland for a long time. There are comparatives. Canada's done a great job. Canada has taken a more calculated and cautious approach than in the US, for example. Canada took a really cautious approach when it came to marketing and promotion, stuff like that, which I think is very good. A lot of industry people like to use that as like a red herring about why it's all bad, but I don't know, I'm not on that side of things. There are some frustrating aspects. I mean, like it was, frustrating to like not have the full breadth of products legal on day one of legalization, right? Like starting out with dried flower only was annoying, but like not the end of the world. But Canada now, what's fascinating about Canada is that like now, instead of like looking to like jurisdictions outside of our territory for lessons and learnings, we can just look at every province is a little petri dish of its own regulatory model, right? Like Quebec, full state monopoly, not even any private retailers. Saskatchewan, completely hands-off. They don't even do distribution. It's private at every step of the level, or at every step of the way, right?
Like, right.
You can be a private distributor, you can be a private retailer. And then you got BC, for example, where it's a hybrid of the two. You've got a state monopoly on the wholesale level. The state monopoly also runs their own government retail, but you also have private retailers who buy from the government and compete with it. So I think I'm fascinated to see, like, at the end of, like, say, 5 years of this, like, what we've learned from, like, these different provincial approaches.
Right, right.
But it's like, it's nice to not have to like compare ourselves to fucking Colorado and California anymore, where it's like just Wild West marketing, promotion, that kind of stuff. You know, I like our Canadian approach to it personally.
Good. Yeah. I mean, I like it as well. And it's one thing where you notice dispensaries just pop up every block closer to you, to where you live. In Ontario, I think the issue was not opening enough stores per capita population. And now that they're doing that though,
The rollout was annoying too, right? Like a lot of the the Kathleen Wynne Doug Ford transition was made everything complicated. Ontario was so populous, it was very suspect to only have 50 stores or whatever for so long.
Yeah, terrible.
But like it's I hate quoting Bill Blair. I hate quoting ex-police officers generally, but like it's a process, it's not an event, you know?
Yeah.
That's just, I've kept that in mind going forward. And I've used that soundbite a lot, so.
Well, it works. And then, well, have you found that at least like, in your view, medical patients are still being taken care of as like a main priority and that hasn't taken the back seat? Or do you think with legalization, it kind of just like, there's even less because people can just go buy it from the store now as opposed to having to go through the medical?
So like the medical, there are still problems with the medical channel in Canada. Like there should, like medical paved the way for what we have now. The medical, the current iteration of the medical program is not great for patients. Legalization overall has crushed a lot of the stigma around using cannabis as a medicine. And it's also made it so available that like, if you were curious about self-medicating with cannabis for whatever it may be, you can go to the store and buy some without getting arrested. That's great. And often it's cheaper in the store than even on the medical channel, right? The future battles for the medical marijuana movement are, in Canada at least, are around cost coverage and specialized medical cannabis retail. And I say that without saying pharmacies, because pharmacies obviously too, but like patients need their own channel for medical access.
Yeah, I would agree.
At the retail level. And they need tax breaks and stuff like that too. So
it's true, it's a different demographic. So you gotta look out for what's gonna work for them.
Yeah.
This one actually, I don't think I provided you with this before, but how likely would we see, or how likely would it be that we might see CBD in pharmacies, like on shelves at some point?
Very likely. They're working on those regulations as we speak. They're working on they're going to be called cannabis health products. And it's a new sort of product class that is like between prescribed medical direct consumer and like go to the store, buy it for your weekend party. It's more akin to like natural health products, like some vitamins and like supplements and that kind of stuff like that. I'm not sure what the timeline on it is, but like it's in the works. So
really cool.
Eventually you'll be able to buy CBD right next to the vitamin C and the fish oil and stuff at Shoppers or wherever. I'll be brand agnostic at the pharmacy.
Of course, yeah. All the, there's all the generic kinds, but
you'll be able to buy Life brand weed soon.
I love that. That's awesome. And so, well, I have a lot of questions. We're not going to get through them at all.
Actually, but... I got time. We can go longer if you want to splice it all up. Yeah.
So then, just curious if you can, like, obviously we've known for a long time THC and CBD as the main ones. THC for medicinal and pain. CBD seems to be, just doesn't get you stoned. It's non-psychoactive, but has its own uses. What are some of these new compounds that we're finding, like CBG?
Well, we've known about all these cannabinoids before. Like, there's not, like, I'm not a big fan of the dichotomy between THC and CBD. They're different molecules with different mechanisms of action and different therapeutic properties. So, you know, yeah, THC is good for some stuff. Let's say appetite, neuropathic pain, that kind of stuff, sleep, CBD, epilepsy, reducing the negative effects of THC. CBD might have antidepressant, serotonergic, anti-anxiety properties as well. We don't know enough about CBD. We need to learn a lot more about it. We have an idea of like what it can do and how it works, but like we're still only just kind of scratching the surface. As far as like new cannabinoids, like there's a lot of hype about them. Like one of these things that weed activists like to deflect is on with is like, oh, like it affects everyone different because there's like 114 different cannabinoids and like it might just like, no, like, yeah, 114 or whatever cannabinoids like exist, but there are only two or three principal ones in the weed that you're smoking. So there's, I mean, they just discovered a new one called THCP that has a higher affinity at the CB1 receptor. So it like, it's just more potent. It'll make you more high with less dose.
Interesting.
Varin cannabinoids, like tetrahydrocannabinol of Varin, THCV. And like all of these like shorter side chain cannabinoids are quite interesting. Like they're all fascinating potential drug development targets, but like they don't occur in significant quantities in commercial cannabis. CBG is just the precursor cannabinoid. Like the plant makes CBG and then turns it into THC or CBD, depending on the enzymes, right? There's a lot of fascinating, there's tons of fascinating stuff on the new cannabinoids. We learn new stuff about them every day.
Right, and then so like Delta 8 and Delta 9 THC, is this all, would you kind of put that into the same category?
Yeah, well, Delta 8 is popular because in the United States, there's an oversupply of cheap purified CBD. Okay, like the legalization of hemp in the US and the legalization of CBD has created a surplus where like you can just buy bulk CBD isolate, like in crystalline form. And that's what everybody's making their CBD stuff out of.
Okay.
Someone figured out that you can convert that into Delta 8 THC. And now they're making vape pens and edibles and all kinds of other stuff with it, which is like, it's fascinating. It's born of a regulatory loophole.
Right. Yeah.
Like Delta 8 is pretty interesting as a molecule. You know, it's like half as potent as Delta 9 THC. I could see it being marketed as like a diet THC or a THC light, but we don't have it in Canada because we don't have the glut of cheap CBD everywhere.
Fair. We have a lot of cheap THC, I imagine, stocked up.
There's quite a bit of weed. Quite a bit of weed sitting around, yeah.
I'd offer to take it off their hands if they're looking for anyone, but
yeah. You have room for it? Like it's gonna take up your whole apartment.
Probably not. I'll swim through my apartment. I don't mind, it'd be fun.
You know what a ton of marijuana looks like? A literal metric ton. It's substantial in its volume. Yeah.
Oh, I bet. Like I'm just thinking of like container crates that got stuck on the evergreen or that on the evergreen that got stuck in the Suez Canal.
Yeah.
Just dump one. Okay. And then so what are some, I guess we should say, interesting developments out of science that, I mean, obviously, you know this well, I know probably a few more, but just for listeners that aren't really sure about cannabis for medicine and a lot of benefits it can give to the body outside of medicine, are you able to just provide some examples and like new things that we've discovered over the last decade that you can think of?
broadly, what I will say is that like the discovery of THC led to the discovery of the entire endocannabinoid system in our bodies. The discovery of the endocannabinoid system was one of the most important discoveries in like neuroscience, like in our lifetime.
It's crazy that no one talks about that either.
It's not even about THC, right? It's yeah. Not even about weed. We have the discovery of this receptor system was a huge, huge neuroscience win. It has helped us to understand just how we work, like how our bodies work. And it's also provided an interesting possible mechanism to explain how other plant medicines might work. So for example, beta-caryophyllene is a terpene found in cannabis that will bind to the CB2 receptors in our bodies. And these receptors mediate things like inflammation and immune responses and stuff like that. So the fact that we have shown that like molecules that are not unique to cannabis can bind to the endocannabinoid receptors provides a really fascinating basis for understanding how other herbal medicines might work. And I think of cannabis as like the queen mother of all plant medicines. And like the endocannabinoid system really is going to help us unlock how some of these herbal remedies that people have been using for a long time like actually work. Because a lot of those herbal remedies are bullshit. Most of them are. But like they're not all of them are bullshit. And like a lot of their activity could be explained by endocannabinoid activity.
So you've just blown my mind. That's a really good answer. Thank you. I'm just thinking like the fact that we have receptors, we're meant to catch the ball. That's, you know, okay. is that a way to put it or what's it?
Because that's a common misinterpretation. Like the only reason we call it the endocannabinoid system is because
it's inside our body, right? Or sorry, I'll let you answer.
Well, that's the endo part. The endo part means it's inside of us. But the only reason cannabinoid is even in the word is because we happened upon this receptor system by way of studying cannabis.
Okay. So
it doesn't mean that like we are designed and destined to be smoking weed all the time to like maintain homeostasis or, you know, whatever all these, you'll hear all that fluffy bullshit.
Right.
In the weed industry. It's not the case because like we also have an endogenous serotonin receptor system. We also have an endogenous opioid system. That doesn't mean that I'm meant to smoke opium all day and, you know, that kind of thing. So a lot of people get that confused. It's a symptom of kind of confirmation bias, naturalistic fallacy. It's well-meaning. And like, I've certainly said that too, like throughout my career, but it's not the best way of framing it.
No, thank you for clarifying just because I wouldn't say destined, but possibly just designed, which gives more proof to the fact that there's less toxic benefit or like less toxic effects on the body than we're led to believe.
Well, that's true. Like weed's generally safe and it's remarkable how non-toxic phytocannabinoids are like compared to other drugs that you can take, like THC is like so not poisonous. You know, you can take so much of it and it might make you passed out or paranoid or panic, but like it's not going to kill you. It's not going to make you stop breathing, right?
Right.
And like that's not because we have an endocannabinoid receptor system. It's because we don't have receptors in the part of our brainstem that controls breathing, where like we have opioid receptors in that part of the brainstem. So if you take too many opioids, you will stop breathing and die.
Wow. Right.
So yeah, like cannabinoids are remarkably non-toxic. The risks of consuming cannabis moderately, even smoking it occasionally, they're pretty low.
Yeah.
Again, like relative to other drugs that are out there.
I try to approach it like when I do refer to it, it's just like trying to block out, like trying to look for the negatives that we've at least discovered, or the lack of negative evidence just calls for having to research and find more positive evidence, I think, at least.
Yeah.
Anyone saying gateway drug, you know, like, I mean.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic because like I talked about it in a TikTok, but like there was a knee-jerk pushback for decades against any negative framing of cannabis use because the research was biased towards finding harm under prohibition. Right. Like, there is evidence of harm. They've been looking just for that for the last several decades.
A century, actually. There's been like the British Raj Commission, the Sadler Commission, the LaGuardia, all of them.
Exactly. It's all like, how bad is it? Tell us how bad it is. Even the Donald Tashkin study that looked at lung health, that was commissioned. They were like, go prove that smoking weed causes lung cancer. Here's all the money you need. And he was like, I can't prove it. Like, we
look, I think that's like, the best we could have asked for, though, right?
Like, it's not great for your lungs, but like, we just, the evidence isn't strong enough for the cancer link that you really want to be talking about. So,
yeah,
you know, but what's happened now is now that it's legal, like, we need to reevaluate that knee-jerk opposition to negative framing, because there are harms associated with it. You can smoke too much weed. You can be addicted to weed. It can be a problematic thing in your life. And like, just because it is non-toxic, that we have an endocannabinoid system, that like it used to be illegal and like the backbone of the systemically racist drug war, none of that, you know, detracts from the fact that it's that there can be risks.
With it, like every substance, though, there is risk with anything, and it ultimately, that's where I think the emphasis needs to go back on the person's self-control, you know, the person using it. And it just seems kind of poetic and like meant to be that at the height of the opioid crisis, where it's just Band-Aid, putting a Band-Aid like on top of Band-Aid on top of Band-Aid, is getting at the root cause. Which
story that you mentioned the opioid pharmacy, the opioid crisis. Here's a funny anecdote I'll share with you. So I used to go to medical trade shows all the time to educate doctors about medical cannabis and to help build my clinic back in the day. And I was at a medical trade show, and my booth was right across from Purdue Pharmaceuticals. And Purdue Pharmaceuticals was at the medical trade show. And what were they pushing? OxyContin and time-release amphetamine. And a rep, one of the sales reps from Purdue, came over to my booth and lectured me about how I was here selling hard drugs. I politely reminded her that she was selling speed and heroin at this trade show, and in one of the most poetic ironies, poetic victories, a few years later, she was a medical marijuana sales rep.
She jumped ship because she knew it was coming.
Yeah.
So. And then Purdue just paid like, what, $8 billion in damages last year, a couple years ago?
Is it eight or 80 billion?
I think it was eight. I'd want it to be 80 billion, but I think it was just eight.
Yeah, it's like, that's chump change for them.
They made it's so seriously, much. Yeah. So, just like,
but and the cannabis industry pays for their misdeeds, right? The restrictions that we face in the cannabis industry, it's not because of stuff that the cannabis industry did. It's because of shit that tobacco, alcohol, and pharmaceutical companies have been pulling for years, looking for loopholes in their regulations, right?
Yeah,
the screws were tightened on cannabis when really, like, they should be tightening the screws on alcohol, on tobacco, on pharmaceutical advertising. So we pay for their sins in a way.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate, because I even think when I look back, like the amount of Bud Light commercials you're exposed to as a kid, just because they run free reign on TV, and even YouTube videos, it's just like, it's so sad that you can't promote cannabis like that in the same way. It's just so unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, on TikTok too. I mean, like, we're fucking, you gotta like, you have to misspell words so that they don't get flagged, but like, it's.
Oh, that sucks. Yeah.
So annoying.
And, well, you must have been dealing with this for a long time. So how do you feel about the double standard, you know, in your 15 years of activism?
I mean, I'm familiar with it. Yeah, the double standards have been there long before TikTok existed.
Yeah, it's true.
On TikTok, it's particularly annoying because, like, you look at, like, there's this, I always use this guy as an example, the two-turnt Tony account. Like, this guy basically just binge drinks all day with his grandma, like, and a duck. He's a walking billboard for booze companies, right? Like, I'm pretty sure he gets money from booze companies. Like, it's a perfect example of the double standard, right? Yeah. Like, I don't like that kind of glorification of any substance use. Like, I have a problem with these dudes who do like 5 gram dabs on camera too. But the double standard's frustrating. It's frustrating for creators. It's frustrating when you're just trying to have an open, honest dialogue about something. And so we'll see how they, we'll see how TikTok fixes it over time.
Yeah.
It was legal, but.
And do you know if the Canadian government would allow any sort of eventual marketing of even just recreational branded products?
The marketing is allowed for recreational cannabis. Like, it's not like you're not allowed to do any promotion. The promotion is just can only happen under certain conditions. So like, you can advertise a cannabis brand within certain parameters. On social media, for example, it has to be age gated. So like, you have to have some guarantee that minors are not seeing the advertisement. And then inside of the advertisement, like, you can't really glorify it. So like, you're not allowed, there's like six specific characteristics that Health Canada lists, and they come right out of tobacco control stuff.
Right.
And it's like, some of it includes like, you can't use a person to market it. So like, you can't use anyone's face, you know, like, you can't, it's not just like you can't have a celebrity selling your weed. It's like, there can be no face. There can be no glamour. There can be no glamour, celebrity. There's like a few other adjectives that are specific to it, which is why when you do see cannabis promotions, it's going to be like, this is the product name. This is how much it costs. This is how much THC is in it. Go to your store. That's it.
That makes sense. And that's why they're so far and few in between.
Yeah.
Actually do it.
And then you can also like, you can also do stuff like, I mean, once concerts and venues open up again and everyone's vaccinated, you can do age gated promotion at age gated events as well. So like, you can go to Beer Fest and have like a little activation for your weed company because everyone there is an adult.
Okay, I see.
Like, it's not zero promotion. There are leeways. It's just like, I can't, if I'm a weed company, I can't just like buy a television ad on cable TV that runs in the middle of the day.
Right. Not very effective anymore either. So
yeah, it's not like I can't run a beer. I can't run an ad that like implies that like you need weed before every social event in your life, like they do with beer, you know, like, hey, going to the hockey game, drink a beer. Hey, your kid's annoying, drink a beer. Hey, you know, like, oh, you're,
hey, you woke up today, drink a beer.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you're Canadian. What are you not doing drinking beer?
Yeah. You a hoser. That's so funny.
So I think the double standard, my hope is that the double standard goes the other way, actually.
Like, I hope so. Yeah. I think people are waking up to it. Yeah.
I don't care if I can't smoke weed on TikTok. I don't care if I can't show off products and promote stuff. My hope is that it goes the other way and they start taking down the alcohol stuff.
Especially alcohol, because it's partying, man. I mean, even myself, alcohol, I don't consume alcohol anymore because there was just a point where I hit rock bottom and it was like, it was me just trying to fit in. And I was like, this isn't my substance. It's not my thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, you learn a lesson at some point. If you choose to learn a lesson, it's just like, and the fact that I did just a year last year completely sober and just as a challenge and did it. And I was like, well, why would I even do it now? Like, I never wanted really to in the first place. But I literally thought I needed it to be a fun person or to be likable, which is very toxic.
Yeah.
So
these are the things we grow out of, you know, I mean, like, chemical coping is a problem. And the earlier you learn chemical coping, you know, when you're a teenager and you're learning how to just like use drugs to cope with your problems instead of other coping mechanisms, that'll turn into a problem for you, whether it's smoking cigarettes or weed or doing Molly or drinking, you know,
anything. Yeah.
Addiction is rooted in trauma.
Yeah. Do you follow Gabor Mate at all?
Yeah. That's where I got that.
He's really good. Well, I watched a few videos of him recently, and I think you mentioned the palliative care unit, and I watched one where he referred that he'd been doing that, and fascinating people out there.
Yeah. Yeah. What's his other thing? The addiction is the opposite of connection, right? That's another Gabor Mate. Right?
Oh, dude, you just, that kind of, that hits. That...
Yeah, you can have a cry. I cried when I heard that too. I was like, damn, Gabor Mate, fuck, dude.
Because now it just makes sense. Now things make sense.
Yeah.
How about Carl Sagan? I didn't know that he was a weed proponent.
Yeah, that was, Carl Sagan. I mean, he's one of my favorite science communicators ever. I love cosmology. I love space. I could read about space all day, every day. So I already loved Carl Sagan because of that. I loved the Cosmos series. I liked the new version of it too. Carl Sagan wrote the foreword to a book called Marijuana Reconsidered, which was a book written by Dr. Lester Grinspoon. And Dr. Lester Grinspoon was one of the first people to talk about the medical benefits of cannabis after he'd lost his son to leukemia and realized that cannabis could have helped him quite a bit, managed the symptoms and so forth. So Carl Sagan wrote an anonymous foreword in this book called Marijuana Reconsidered, and he signed it Mr. X. And it's like, it's so beautiful. It's like, it's one of the most, I think, eloquent just descriptions of the cannabis experience that you'll ever read.
Oh, and he's just so well-spoken, right? So like, oh, I can just imagine.
Oh, it's butter. It's just, it's all butter. Yeah. Right? And then years later, it was revealed. I feel like it must have been after he passed away.
Yeah.
That it was revealed that the guy who wrote that was Carl Sagan.
That makes my heart so happy.
Yeah. And of course, it gets blown up into like, you see, like, pot smokers aren't all lazy and stupid. Like, this guy smokes weed. You know, yeah. It was vindication for every stoner who'd been sort of like marginalized and stigmatized for using weed and sort of characterized as stupid or lesser. So
yeah, well, more and more of that's coming out, which is great. I listened to a podcast the other day about a traveler named Rick Steves on How I Built This, and just by the end of it, like, oh, fun fact, Rick Steves is a massive proponent of cannabis legalization.
Yeah,
and he's just like, oh yes, I love cannabis. My New Year's resolution is always to smoke more, but I never get around to it.
Yeah.
But and that's what brings change, right? People building up their own wealth and being able to use that to kind of fill in the same practices, I imagine. But what's great about cannabis is that it also has like what we're finding out about it too. And how big do you think the industry will eventually become?
I mean, I don't know how many billions of dollars it'll be worth, but it'll be huge. It's already huge.
Do you think it could be worth trillions of dollars as tech has become worth that much? Like potentially when compounds are sold over the counter because we understand them more and like even CBD. So, like,
how much is the alcohol industry worth? Is alcohol worth trillions?
No. But I think cannabis, like when you break down, because alcohol is for drinking and then there's luxury products for parties and stuff. I just think once we really understand cannabis, it can really branch out into, you know, hemp, sustainable building, using like, it's a lot bigger.
Of course.
Yeah.
I'm skeptical of like trillions.
Yeah. I mean, well, who would have thought tech companies could be worth trillions of dollars? Who could like even comprehend those numbers? But they are.
Yeah. The thing with cannabis though is like, it's not like you can do so many things with data.
Yeah, it's true.
And like your knowledge of a person. And like, I mean, the tech companies know fucking everything about us. They know more about us than we know about ourselves, right? Like you go on your TikTok algorithm and you're like, damn. Like some of the things I see on TikTok leave me just questioning who I am. Right? Like, the algorithm knows me better than I do sometimes.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of value in that. Weed, no matter how much you turn it into a consumer packaged good, is still a consumer packaged good. And it's like self-limiting.
That's true. That's true.
By that. Like Google, I mean, Jesus, you invent the first search engine. Of course, that's going to be worth trillions of dollars. Like no one could have seen what the internet would have turned into, but.
Yeah. And not that I want it to be a money grab or anything like it, as it absolutely shouldn't, cannabis, but we don't know what we don't know. So I'll let the future surprise me, but I think that's cool.
I mean, I think Canadians spend like a few billion dollars a year on weed. You know, I think the Canadian market's worth $2 or $3 billion.
It was 1.2 in 2019, 2.6 last year, and projected to hit 4.1 billion this year.
And is that inclusive of illegal and legal sales, or is that just the legal side?
Just legal sales.
Right. Okay. So like, let's say in a few years, the legal weed industry in Canada is worth like $3 or $4 billion. That's $4 billion for 35 million people.
Right.
Extrapolate that onto the world population and subtract some kind of percentage, and you probably have some like napkin math estimate of what it's worth.
The US would be a better example. Obviously, it's not fully legalized, but let's just say with their population, and they made 17.5 billion last year, and they're projected to make 23 billion this year. It's hard to say, but I think globally, like, because that's when cannabis does become accepted globally.
Yeah. We're talking hundreds of billions. We're talking hundreds of billions.
Regardless, though, yeah, it's pretty darn cool. Nice. Well, so last question I want to ask you, just the one that I do ask most of my guests, this is more of just like a storytelling personal growth podcast, but what would you say are three of the biggest investments that you've proactively made in yourself over your lifetime that helped get you to where you are now?
Yeah, I didn't prepare anything for this question. And I listened to your interview with Amanda Siebert.
Nice. You know, you must know Amanda, of course.
Yeah, of course. The three things that I've invested in myself. Well, psychotherapy has been a great investment for me. It's a very valuable thing to be able to reflect on yourself and your feelings with someone objectively.
I agree.
I'm trying not to make these like money answers, because like I'm not an investment financial advisor at all.
No, that's good. And I think of habits or commitments or just things you stuck to, because
pursue, invest in what you believe in and what you're passionate about, you know, like be confident in your convictions, and similarly, like understanding like when you're wrong and like being able to change your view with new evidence.
Yeah,
that's not really an investment thing, but that's been very valuable for me, because like I used to be more zealous about the cannabis stuff than I am now, and like zealotry is a big problem, right? It's cool to be passionate and to think that cannabis is like the solution to so many problems, but like you got to like bring yourself back to reality sometimes when you get into that, especially if you look at like the Rick Simpson stuff and all those crazy fucking people who go out and say it's the cure to every cancer, and you know, like there's a lot of wing nuttery zealotry in weed that you want to avoid. And what's the third thing? Like invest in going outside and like enjoying this beautiful planet while we still have it, and invest in people you love.
Relationships. Yeah. Do you skateboard?
I used to. If you can, can you see the skateboards? I can
see your boards in the back. Yeah.
They're just ornamental now. I have a pot leaf on this one.
That's fitting.
But I used to skateboard for like transportation purposes. I was never good at like skateboard tricks, but I get injured on the skateboard really soon, so I prefer my bike and I prefer running. Invest in running, invest in exercise. Running changed my life more than weed ever did. Yeah.
Really? Okay. Good to know. Yeah. Well, those are all great answers. And it's, I think the running theme on here, though, is always just like putting yourself first, or like looking in to find these answers and not looking for these answers outside.
Yeah. And a lot of it seems like obvious advice, but like it takes a long time for it to apply that stuff.
Yeah. And well, you've moved up to Vancouver and the West Coast for that nature. And that's, gotta be,
it's one of money one. Invest in Vancouver real estate.
That too. 10 years ago.
Yeah. Not now. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, your last one, while I have you then, have you read Brave New World lately?
Lately, no, but I've read it several times.
And does it creep you out? One of my favorites.
I love Aldous Huxley.
Good. I just started reading Island today. I'm quite excited.
I love it. You'll love it. That is my favorite Aldous Huxley. That's one of my favorite books, period. Of all
really?
Time. Yeah. It's awesome. Island. There are so many fascinating themes in that book. The like the little utopian society of yogis. I don't know how far along in it you are.
I've just started, but I'm gonna read it regardless.
There are fascinating concepts in there that like that still blow my mind. It explores like the concept of like a mutual adoption club. Like you'll see like the kid. There's a part where like the kids on that island, they kind of get to pick whoever their parents are. There's mention of I won't spoil it for you, but there's like some psychedelic stuff. You've probably already started reading about the mushrooms. Like they're probably already talking about the mushrooms. He meets like the mushroom scientist, right? As soon as he gets onto the island.
Oh, I think maybe. I'm right there. Like, I think I'm on page 20. So I'm like very fresh. I just started this morning, but.
Well, there's a mushroom religion on that island, and there's just so many fascinating stuff to explore.
And I know what I'm getting into, which is great. Yeah. But Well, like with Brave New World, because I was always like, well, what if, you know, cannabis kind of makes people, what if it becomes soma? But like, would you not think technology is already the soma in a way that's...
I think a lot of things are soma. I think weed could be, I mean, in the Huxleyan sense of what soma is, I think.
Yeah. More of a symbol than an actual thing. Yeah, yeah.
Numbing your emotions is soma, right? Like numbing yourself is soma. And you can do that with TV. You can do that with weed. You can do it with other chemicals.
Alcohol, yeah.
Alcohol. But the Huxley, but that Brave New World, you know, Huxley was more correct than Orwell, for example, in how he characterized totalitarianism.
Yeah.
And like the Brave New World version of it, where like we are like actively buying into our servitude, and like we are like proactive participants in this totalitarian sort of, or this like in this proto-fascism, is very real. It's certainly not the sort of like jackboot authoritarianism of 1984. So yeah, I mean, Huxley was brilliant beyond his years. And there's so much we can learn from reading and studying his works for sure.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you speak so highly of him as well, because I quite enjoy him. And I'm gonna read Brave New World after Island too, but just the fact that on YouTube, there's an interview with him in black and white and someone else. And like the fact that we can hear someone like Aldous Huxley speak still in this day and age is so fascinating. And
yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's what a fantastic mind. Like if you're not reading Aldous Huxley, I'm impressed if you don't need a dictionary while you're reading Aldous Huxley, right? Like yeah. Your vocabulary will explode reading Aldous Huxley.
One thing's funny, just like a personal anecdote, but to think back, like one of the first books I ever bought at the bookstore, like 15 years old, just going there and, you know, hey, you got a gift card, go buy a book. I bought Doors of Perception.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, when you think about you think back in your life and just like all these little signs and now the fact that cannabis is becoming legal, and it's just like, it's just so interesting to think like of all books, I would end up buying that. And then, you know.
Well, coincidences are there to, you know. They're it's creating meaning for you for a reason.
Right? Yeah, no, that's a great way to end this, man. Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on and sharing your wisdom. It's been awesome to chat with you finally.
Thanks for having me. Keep up the work you're doing too. I also enjoy your show and what you've got going on TikTok.
Thank you, Adam. I will. So where can people find you online if they want to check you out?
Well, I'm Weed Pro on TikTok, and I'm Adam_Greenblatt on Twitter. And I'll have like a new Instagram to connect to my TikTok soon. For now, yeah, TikTok and Twitter.
Awesome.
Cool, man.
All right, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that is it for episode 87, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that and got some value out of it. If you did, please share it with any friends or like-minded individuals. And if you wouldn't mind going to leave a review or rating, I would really appreciate it, as it helps my podcast and it helps me continue to bring on more interesting guests. You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Radio Public, and at anchor.fm/highlyinvested. This is your host, Jordan Highly, signing off. Stay highly invested in yourselves, everybody. Till next time.